coming up next on Functional Moms Podcast.
I think there's a difference between processed and ultra processed foods. And the definition that I use is that I'm always reading ingredients. Before I buy anything, I'm going to read the ingredients. The definition of an ultra processed food is if it's in a package, obviously, and it contains one or more ingredients that you wouldn't find in your kitchen, don't buy it. But there are things like, for example, pasta sauce, where it's tomatoes and, like, you know, all the herbs you want and extra virgin olive oil. I have every single one of those things in my kitchen or outside. Like, that's okay. So the good thing is that there's companies that are making higher quality products, because we don't have time to make our own pasta sauce and can our own pickles and make our own peanut butter.
Welcome to Functional Moms Podcast, lifestyle medicine for women over 40. Let's age on our own terms.
This episode is for you if you feel overwhelmed by all the nutritional information out there for you and your family. Artificial dyes, high fructose corn syrup, seed oils, and natural flavors. Most of us know we should be avoiding these inflammatory additives, but let's face it, sometimes you read these ingredients and your head is spinning.
Our guest today is Haley Shaikh, the co-founder of My Superhero Foods, a wellness brand that teaches families about the powers of real foods and the importance of what we put in our bodies. She's a working mama of three kids and three stepkids, ages 3 to 18, and married to Dr. Tarek Pasha, her best friend and co-founder.
Haley, thank you so much for coming on the show today. You have a very interesting story, having begun your career in the healthcare industry, working for Pfizer, where you realized there was a disconnect between the healthcare and nutrition industries. We would love to start by hearing your story.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me on, guys. I'm super excited to be here. And you're right. I started my career 21 and working for Pfizer. And at the time, they even said it was harder to get into Pfizer than it was into Harvard. So I'm 21. I came from a pretty middle-class family, grew up on the standard American diet. My parents were, doing the best that they could, of course. And well, we struggled financially. And so I just was motivated to come out of school. I wanted a job that was going to pay a lot of money so that I could then just give back to my parents in a big way and kind of take care of them the way that they took care of me. So I had no idea about pharmaceutical sales. It was a professor that said, hey, you know, you should look into this. My degree was in finance and international business. So I love a good challenge. I looked into it. I'm like, yeah, this sounds pretty cheeky and pretty fun. I'm going to go for this. It pays really well. And it's challenging to get in. And like I said, I like a good challenge. So right. 21 years old, it was a long, tedious process of interviews. And I made it into the company, if you will, working for a sales rep. And at the time, I was really proud of that. I was really proud. Like, I'm working for Pfizer. I'm going to change lives. We make life-saving medicine. This is incredible. Yes. And that's really who I identified as for a long time. And I ended up working there for 10 years. And it wasn't until, there were some eye-opening experiences along the way. It wasn't until that very end, the last couple of years, where I'm like, wow, I just progressed in my views, in my view of health, in my view of what I was doing for this company. It just felt backwards by the time I was done. And I'm like, this isn't for me anymore. But, looking back, I'm grateful because I was exposed to the medical field. The training at Pfizer was so intense, and it lasted 6 months. You would take weekly tests. If you didn't get above, an 85%, then you're on a plan and you could be fired. And so you had to learn, everything about the body system, everything about the pharmacokinetics of medicine, because you were going to be talking to physicians about it. So I learned a ton. I'm grateful for that. But like I said, towards the end, it was just kind of like, what am I doing here anymore? I'm selling a medicine for overactive bladder when all people need to do is change their behaviors, change their lifestyle, make lifestyle modifications, and you don't have to be on this drug. And it just didn't feel like the company was aligned with it. Rather, it was just like, push this pill. And I'm like, right. But we don't have to be on this pill if they change their diet. And so you can see how towards the end, it didn't align anymore with what I knew to be true.
How did you, because you were in finance and you said how did you make that connection that they just need to change their lifestyle Like, how did you know that?
Yeah, so you're right. I was in finance, and I feel like that's a really important point because I actually had a better chance getting into Pfizer, at least from the sales end of it, because I was in the business world, and it's a business. Right. Right? It's not yes. about people who went to med school or, you know, that did something more in the medical field and then came on to Pfizer. They were looking for strategic business people that were going to maximize the sales of their pharmaceuticals. But I made the connection, you know, interestingly enough, it was a girlfriend, and I will always, always credit her with this and never forget this. But I took a couple promotions at Pfizer. I moved up to Ann Arbor, Michigan, and she said, you need to get into yoga. There's a great yoga studio right there. You're going to love it. And so I did. And that was the first like real like a mind, body, like body health experience where I connected everything together. I fully enjoyed this hot vinyasa yoga to the point where like I wanted to get up every day. I didn't have kids yet. So I wanted to get up every day early and practice. And what I realized is the thing that affected my practice the most, how I felt, you know, how I showed up and what was I able, like how my balance was, how my stomach was, how my gut was what I ate the day before and that morning. So it was like all about the foods. And I realized the more real one ingredient foods that I've ate, you know, the less I went out and stayed up late the night before, the better I felt and therefore the better a practice I had. And so that was really my first inkling into like, wow, what you eat and also what you don't eat is so, so powerful. And then the rest is history for me.
Right.
You know, I just have to share, I relate to your story so much because I actually started my career off in pharmaceutical public relations, promoting, you know, drug studies to newspapers and journalists and talking about the benefits. And I felt the same as you. I felt proud that I was helping people get healthy. Like I thought pharmaceuticals like make people healthy. And that was kind of my whole connection. And then my kind of wake up was when my third child was born. She had tons of food allergies. And I was like, no one had food allergies when I was growing up. So something definitely is different here. And that's when I started looking into the labels and like really examining, you know, how food matters and how it affects us and how food keeps us healthy, not pharmaceuticals per se. So I really love your story and I can definitely identify with it a lot.
Yeah, I think that's great that you had a similar experience. And I mean, so well said, food keeps us healthy, not the pharmaceuticals.
Right.
Yeah. So that being said, one of the things that we're really curious about, because it's like you hear this all day long, what are seed oils and why should we avoid them? What is the deal with seed oils? Like lately, all you hear about is seed oils. Like that's one of the major things that have changed in the food. Like when you think about like what we weren't eating, you know, I don't know how many years ago. And one of the things that you see people like having all these health issues or they're super fat or whatever, like obese or whatever. And I think it's like been talking a lot about these seed oils.
Yeah. So I woke up to seed oils. That was kind of my most recent kind of wake up, if you will. It was about 4 years ago. And it was thanks to the great work of Dr. Kate Shanahan. And what's interesting is there's this real agenda to kind of go against her work. And we all know food, big pharma, they're all connected. And it's funny how they're just kind of like labeling her as a quack. But I feel like when you get like big pharma, big ag, big food labeling someone as a quack, they're really like scared, right? Because she's onto something. So she's a physician. She's also, I think she has biology, like some sort of like molecular biology major as well. But she's really gone deep into these seed oils and spoke out a lot about them during COVID. And that was really eye-opening for me. I started kind of like, she has a couple of really great books out there. She has a new one that she just, you know, released. And I started getting deeper into her work because that's what she really focused on. Mm. And it's just these seed oils and how damaging they are in our bodies. And so, you know, there's three main types of fat. There's your saturated fat, your monounsaturated fat, and then there's your polyunsaturated fat. Mm-hmm. And the polyunsaturated fat, like we really only need small amounts. That's like your omega 3s, 6s, 9s. And so, you know, I'm a huge fan of the saturated fat, like the pastured animal fat, butter, ghee, tallow. Also monounsaturated fats, things like olive oil, a good quality avocado oil, you know, making sure that they're real, not cut with these seed oils. And then you have these seed oils and they fall into the polyunsaturated fat kind of arena. And these are incredibly, so there's lots of things that are alarming red flags about these seed oils. The first is that they're pro-inflammatory in the body. So our body loves good quality fat, and it just is, it's amazing energy for our body. But this type of fat actually gets stored in our body instead of being burnt, like the saturated and the monounsaturated fat. And it's because we only need a small amount, and anything else is kind of overwhelming. These are fats that they're very pro-inflammatory in the body. And why is that? It's because when we think about how seed oils are made, and let me step back. So a seed oil is like a vegetable oil, which is kind of the disguised term for either a soybean oil or canola oil, but it's soybean, canola, grapeseed, sunflower oil, saffron oil, rapeseed oil, all of these oils that come from seeds. So these seeds, if we think about it, they're sprayed with glyphosate likely. And then they're extracted using harsh chemicals like hexane. They're refined, they're bleached, they're deodorized. And so in a huge factory, by the time we see these oils, they come to us and they're in these clear plastic bottles. You know, they're being oxidized by the light. And there's these harsh chemicals in them just due to the processing already, things like 5-H&E, you know, these all these things linked to cancer. And then we're using these oils to cook with. And so essentially we're heating them up, and that is causing more oxidation and breakdown. Right. When the oil breaks down, it releases, again, like these chemical compounds or these cancer-causing compounds. And it just wreaks havoc on our bodies. We don't burn those as clean fuel like we do with the other types of fat. And if you look at the ingredients in processed foods today, it's one of the top ingredients. I mean, you will most definitely find a seed oil in probably 95% of the ultra-processed foods that are in the grocery store. It's a cheap filler.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
And it's also, there's some interesting studies, not a ton, but there's some work saying that these are pro-addictive as well. Like they have these addictive properties to them as well. And so, you know, they're cheap and they're ideal for these food companies to use as fillers in their ultra processed foods. And so, you know, they're linked to metabolic dysfunction. Again, Dr. Kate Shanahan talks a lot about that. Obesity, diabetes, and they just so often just kind of fly under the radar. You know, we're looking and we're checking the sugar, we're checking for, you know, calories, but we're not checking to see if our food contains these seed oils.
Right.
Personally, like I said, I was kind of clued into them about 4 years ago, and her research was really compelling. And so I just went cold turkey. I'm like, I am cutting these things out. And I felt amazing. I felt like I just had more energy after doing so. I feel like my skin, like I grew up very white, pale skin, always having to use sunscreen. And I just feel like my skin tans now, and I never had a tan before. And so it's just fascinating. It's like, what are these seed oils really doing inside our body?
And how long have they been like in our food? Because it's definitely something that I've just heard about, yeah, over the past couple of years to look into. But like, have they been in our food since like the 90s or the early 2000s? Like,
oh gosh, you know what? I don't know the exact answer to that, but I don't know. I want to say 70s. They've been in since the 70s, not 100%.
Okay. That. And what's confusing is the American Heart Association would say, oh, that's, they're good for you. They're vegetable oils. That's a better choice than, right? Like a beef tallow or something. Like,
yeah, that's where it gets really confusing, because you especially have, what I find is that you have a lot of cardiologists that still believe these are healthy. And if you go to the grocery store and you look at the aisle where all of the seed oils are, you see vegetable oil, canola oil, they carry the symbol heart healthy. And yeah, so yes, the American Heart Association is saying these are heart healthy. And the reason that they're doing so is there is some literature showing that they do reduce LDL. And I feel like the cardiologists are so hyper-focused on that. I mean, now they've come out and said, like, you know, we don't really need to worry about our cholesterol numbers. You know, there's some ratios that we should be focusing on instead, but we need cholesterol for our brain, our hormone health. And so this hyper-focus on like reducing LDL, is that really the key here to getting healthy? You know, because they're dismissing the fact that these oils are so pro-inflammatory in the body. And they're dismissing the fact that, like, just step back and look how these oils are created. Look at all of these chemicals that are in it. And then we're heating it and reheating it and reheating it. And then we're eating this stuff. I mean, they were originally like, you know, used for soap and then somehow or another made it into our food system. That alone is alarming to me. But, you know, that's the confusing part is that you have such a spectrum with some physicians actually saying like, you should eat these are good for your heart. And then you have the other end kind of saying like, you know, these are awful. These are causing metabolic dysfunction, heart disease.
Yeah. And you know, you mentioned the grapeseed oil, right? So it's interesting because I remember like years ago, you started hearing like, oh, it's not good to cook with olive oil, like high heat. And then I started noticing like this bottle of grapeseed oil that was being marketed as a great alternative for, so I was like, oh, I'm going to buy the grapeseed oil because it says it's good for high temperature. So I would cook with the grapeseed oil and use the olive oil for other things. It's unbelievable. And I think I'm doing like this amazing thing for my family.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I was doing walnut oil. So all these seed oils, they also have in common, they're high in linoleic acid. And that's kind of the pro-inflammatory component of them. And even like a walnut oil is high in linoleic acid. So, you know, I'm like buying these expensive bottles, like thinking I'm doing good, just like you. I'm like, this is great for my family. And then come to find out, it's like, you know, I think when in doubt, I think the best thing is just what did my great great grandparents do? Like, let's go back to like how our ancestors ate, you know, things like butter, fat, butter, tallow, ghee. These all have really high smoke points and they can't be used in higher heat cooking and they're not breaking down into these harmful chemicals. But I mean, I'm with you, Raquel. It's like, it's just so confusing. And
who
do you trust nowadays?
Yeah, exactly. And just the fact when you just said when in doubt, and the sad part is that at that time, I literally had no doubt. Like I literally fully believed.
Right.
So it was literally like somebody just pulled the rug. Like I just fell flat on my like, oh my God, like what? Like I had no doubt. I thought like, oh, this is a great thing. This is good for, you know, high. So it's mind boggling and it's kind of scary, honestly. You know, we're all moms and we're trying to, we're the ones that are going food shop. Well, you know, I'm not saying every mom on the planet, but most of us are the ones that are in charge of. And so like, that's my department. And so it's really very disheartening. What were, when you said like, look back, just look back at what our great, great, right? That has been something that has been very, very, very helpful because like, seriously, you know, like we said in the opening, you can go into the supermarket and you're trying to decide like, what am I, your head is spinning because you're like, wait a minute, they said that wasn't good. Wait a minute, that wasn't, wait, is that good? Are they trying to trick me? So it's like, go back. What did my great, great, like, what would they be cooking? Like, just cook, like you're in Little House on the Prairie right now. What are you eating?
And it really is like, it's cooking from scratch a lot, which I know people aren't thrilled with, but I feel like even not that long ago, I bought a package of meatballs. They said grass fed on them. They were frozen. I rarely, mostly I make my own meatballs, but I was like, oh, yes, in a pinch, I'll use this. So I cooked them. My son was like, these taste terrible, first of all, but I was like, whatever. But then I looked at them and there was soy oil in it. And I'm thinking, if I'm making my own meatballs with my grass-fed beef, I am not putting soy oil in meatballs. It's a very odd thing to put in. So it just goes to show, I guess, the more you just make your own stuff, the better off you are.
And I don't even understand, like, why would they put that oil in there? Like, what is the purpose? I don't know. Like, is there, I'm just wondering, like, is there a mission? Like, what is the mission here for our population? Like, for our families? I don't understand. It's just amazing. So one of our questions was, is it okay to consume small amounts of seed oils? I think we know the answer to that at this point.
Yeah. I mean, there's some pretty compelling research out there that shows it takes several years to get, I mean, because like I said, they get stored in your fat. They don't get burned as that clean fuel. They get stored in our fat. And so there's literature saying it takes a couple years to rid them of the body. So, yikes. I mean, I just stay clear. And it's funny too, because, you know, there's just this progression that I've had. I just was reflecting on this earlier today of like, you know, when I first started out, it was like counting calories, right? Eat anything. Everything at the grocery store is safe. And that's the hardest part for moms, I feel like, because a lot of moms don't know any better. It's like, if it's in the grocery store, I trust it. Yeah. That's really like, darn it. Those food companies don't care about your kids' health at all. They just want to make money. But I was, so at first it was like counting calories. It was like, give up sugar. And then it was kind of like, okay, I'm gonna cut out gluten and dairy, tried the vegan thing, tried the keto thing. But anyways, I progressed all the way to like, I need to make it at home. I can't really trust what's in the grocery store anymore. And so I've really been trying to eat locally, like where is my food coming from? Either I'm growing it myself or I know the person that's growing it. I'm getting my meat from a local rancher that I'm like, they're seeing it. I'm getting my raw milk from, you know, the dairy where I like know Ruth. I talk to her and she's like, you know, out milking the cows every day.
Right.
Because if you don't, it's like you just really, you really don't know anymore. And that's the hardest thing for me. That's the most devastating part of all of it is that I feel really privileged that I'm able to, that I have this knowledge. And I'm, that's what my mission is. It's like, I really want to share that with other moms because they don't know any better. And those first years are so critical for our kids' health. And statistics today tell us that kids are growing up on like a diet that 70% ultra processed foods.
I know. Yeah, we've seen that.
So, you know, even though the box, the grocery store tells us like, you know, heart healthy or, you know, made with all these B vitamins, those are synthetic fake vitamins. Those are not the same as real food. Those foods are void of so much nutrition. And so our kids are growing up on that. They're not getting the nourishment that their brains, their bodies need. And then we see all these like diseases, you know, mental health, all that on the rise. And we wonder why. And it's just, you know, it's so frustrating because those food companies do not care about our health. They value profits over people. And people just are trusting those food companies so blindly. And we're just ending up with kids that are now sicker than ever. It breaks my heart. It's so sad and infuriating at the same time.
Yeah. You know, I love the point that when you make, when you talk about like, if, you know, some of these moms don't know any better. And, you know, the thing is that I think it was Maya Angelou. If I knew better, I'd do better. You know, so I think that goes such a long way because just like me in that, you know, I remember I was in Costco. I was like, oh, grapeseed oil, good for heating. Like, great. Like, I really believed it. Like, I didn't know better. And so really, like, you know, I just like applaud the work that you're doing, you and your husband. Like, I cannot tell you because I just think about my own daughter. You know, some of the things that you're saying, I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't wait to tell my daughter. I have grandchildren, you know, and so, and they're like, they're vegetarian. And I tell you, like, some of the things I see them eating, and I'm like, I don't think this is better than meat.
Yeah.
I'm just like, you know, so I'm like gathering the information and I just want to share it with her so then she can really make the choice. Because if she knew better, I know she'd make better. I think she's going to make the right choices. And I'm just learning these things, some of these things for myself. And, you know, as you're talking about these seed oils, one of the questions that we have here, are some seed oils better than others?
Oh, man. I mean, I guess. So I think that one of the most damaging aspects of seed oils is they're high in this linoleic acid. That is what is very pro-inflammatory in our body. That's what breaks down to these harmful substances. So there is a spectrum for sure. And ironically enough, like the safflower oil, sunflower oil, those are all really high in this linoleic acid.
They are. Because I thought maybe like the organic expeller press that's in like Simple Mills products, is that like okay or no?
Well, gosh. So, I mean, my stance is like there, no seed oil is a good seed oil, really. Now, when you look at like expeller pressed, at least it's not being, it's not as refined. So, you know, especially like you see words like cold pressed, which is even better than expeller pressed. You know, that's how like olive oil is made.
Right.
It's minimal processing, if you will.
So they're not using like the chemical solvents or whatever on it as much as?
Not often. Now, it gets a little bit. I mean, it gets a little hairy.
There could be some gray
area. You never
area.
Really know. So, but
yeah,
then you look
right. You never know.
Like the soybean oil, the vegetable oil, canola oil. I mean, those are all sprayed with glyphosate and they're all like refined, bleached, deodorized. I mean, even my guess is to say they're not being, there's not like, you know, chemicals used to extract. So they're expeller pressed. So no chemicals used, but they're still being, you know, bleached and deodorized. I mean, even like a coconut oil, for example, we think is great, but there's two types of coconut oil. There's the raw, the virgin coconut oil, and it's unrefined. And then there's refined coconut oil. Now, refined has a higher smoke point, so you can use it at higher temperatures, but refined has been refined, bleached, and deodorized. It has been processed.
Wow.
So
okay.
It's like, I feel like if you can stay away from those, and actually, I love it because when you say like, stay away from seed oils, by default, you're staying away from so many processed foods because they all have it in it.
Yeah.
So like the simple meals, you're just like, I'm not going to, I mean, I think there are some simple meals that don't have the seed oils in them, but yeah, you have to kind of like pick and choose and always be reading the ingredients. I mean, I don't know.
What high you talk about, like, well, if you use this coconut, you know, this is like, this hasn't been refined and that would be a good coconut oil to use. But if you're looking for a high smoke point, then the refined one is going to have a higher, what would you use? Like when you're talking about like those highs, something that would be good for cooking and that type of stuff. What do you use?
I live in the butter, ghee, tallow world. That's where you'll find me always. I mean,
okay.
I like coconut oil to do the oil pulling. And if I'm looking for a unique flavor when I'm baking, I'll use like an unrefined coconut oil, keeping it at like that 350. Butter, anytime I'm baking, I'll use butter because butter doesn't have as high of a smoke point as ghee and tallow. But if I'm doing high heat cooking, I'm using ghee and tallow. And ghee is so easy to use.
Yeah. I do love ghee personally. Yeah. I think it makes things taste great too.
And so what's the deal with olive oil?
I think olive oil is great, but I don't heat my olive oil. So I use it to make like dressings or I'll do a drizzle at the end. There's a lot of great monounsaturated fat in there. There's a lot of good nourishment and a quality olive oil. You know, the tricky part with olive oil and avocado oil, I hate to be like the bearer of bad news, but it just speaks to, again, like know your farmer, know where your food's coming from, know the source, because I don't know, 80-some% of avocado oil and olive oil are fake. They're cut with seed oils. There was one study done, UC Davis, this was several years ago, and they looked at, you know, a wide range of avocado oils, you know, ones that you'd find at the grocery store, all say pure, 100%, all the jazz on the front.
Really?
And it was 82% of them were either cut with other seed oils or were rancid or were 100% a seed oil. There was actually no avocado oil in them, despite it saying 100% avocado oil.
Now,
so like, so disturbing.
How does that happen?
I know. It's just, it's not very regulated. So companies are getting away with this. And the same could be said about olive oil too. So that's why for me, it's like, I don't even usually mess around with that. I do buy like a high quality olive oil. I feel like with olive oil, you want to look for extra virgin. Again, that means like very like cold pressed, unrefined, minimal processing and extracting that oil out. Single source. That's a big one. Look for just one origin. Usually like more of the glass, darker bottles or the tins.
Right.
And the price point, a good olive oil is going to be more expensive.
And
if it meets those criteria, I feel like in general it's pretty safe. I'll use that. But otherwise, I'm using stuff I know and trust, like the tallow, the ghee, and the butter. Because you can't fake that yet.
Just pausing there for a moment. When you said single source, what does that mean? Like to the average mom out there shopping for an olive oil, how does she know it's a single source?
And so it'll tell you right on the bottle. So usually it's on the back. Sometimes it's right on the front and it'll say
like made in Italy.
Yes, exactly. And then you'll also see, you know, sometimes it's like comes from three different countries. And so that then it just gets a little bit more questionable. It's like,
yeah,
can you trust all three of these countries and they're all coming together and what? And you know, the other thing that I just recently learned, again, I'm just like, what is going on today in our world? But grass-fed meat, you even have to be careful with that. Like, you know, we used to go to like Aldi and you could get grass-fed meat for like $3.99. Like, this is amazing, but it just feels too good to be true. Mm-hmm. Well, come to find out, even grass-fed meat, like sometimes it's sourced from three different countries and they're just feeding it alfalfa pellet instead of actually like pasturing the cow. But then they could put on there grass-fed. So it gets tricky. I mean, I hate to even throw this stuff out there because you get into some real nuance and it can just seem so overwhelming for people.
Exactly.
So it's just like, well, I can't even trust grass-fed now. What do I do? So I really like, I'm sometimes hesitant to share that. I feel like just in general, moving towards more one ingredient foods, cooking at home, using quality ingredients because you know what you're cooking with.
Yeah.
And then as much as you can, eliminating ultra processed foods, like just those things, right? And then also go to your local farmer's market and get your produce as much as you can there. Make two stops, like first your local farmer's market, get what you can, try to cook with that. If you need extra stuff, then go get your produce at the grocery store. If you just follow those three things, I feel like you're going to be way better off.
Wow.
And even if you're eating the grass fed that's made with alfalfa pellets, like it's better than like the CAFO lot, you know, conventional meat.
I could totally see them like putting like grass in there, like giving the cow like a little handful of grass. He's grass fed.
Yeah.
It's true.
Check. I know.
It's a grass fed cow.
It's so awful. I mean, that's why I made that progression of like, as much as I can, I'm going to know where my food comes from, because
it's a really good point. Yeah. So we have to ask you, you recently posted that over 90% of the chemicals added to food since 2000 were approved by the food industry and not the FDA. And that's shocking to us. Can you share a little bit about that?
Yeah. So it's just, you know, it's another loophole. So there's what's considered generally recognized as safe, GRAS. And basically this loophole says that if the company believes it to be generally recognized as safe, they can just add the ingredient into the food. And even furthermore, like they can choose whether they want to notify the FDA or they don't. So that was a study done in 2022. The Environmental Working Group did it. And they looked at, I don't know, 700 and some ingredients, and 750 out of 760 were like just put on this GRAS list, never went through the FDA, ended up in our food, which is alarming too. I mean, people are like, well, you know, I ate like this growing up, so I'm going to be all right. And it's like, no, I mean, this was just since 2000. So that was 700 and some chemicals introduced since 2000. Like the food, even though it was still the Pop-Tarts and the McDonald's French fries and, you know, remember the TV dinners and stuff? I mean, those toaster strudels, it still didn't have as much of that stuff on. And then also look at us. I mean, now we're, you know, we're a nation where the obesity rate is incredibly high. So it did affect us to some degree. So
yeah. Tell us again what GRAS is.
So it stands for generally recognized as safe. So it's a GRAS, it's the GRAS list. And so if a food company thinks
that sounds scary.
Yeah.
Generally recognized as safe, they put on the list and put it in their food.
Wow.
I mean, I can't even make this stuff up.
Yeah. So, where's the science?
I share this stuff because I'm just trying to like wake people up of like, we can't trust our food. We really can't. We've got to like take this into our own hands now. We've got to protect our family because our kids' taste buds are being hijacked. You know, these food scientists are developing these foods. They're made, they're designed to be addicting. They're designed to taste better than real foods. And so no wonder now kids are preferring the processed foods,
Absolutely.
The ultra processed foods to real foods. And it's a real, you know, and then, you know, there's another group, Moms Across America. It's a nonprofit. I absolutely love the work they're doing.
We had Zen, on our podcast. Yes, she came on.
We had Zen on our podcast.
She's amazing. And so she did a study where she looked at like fast food, where she analyzed the fast food. She analyzed school lunches. And like they're all nearly void the minerals and the B vitamins that our kids' brains need to fully properly develop. And so we're eating these ultra processed foods. They're void of all that. We're eating the fast food and the school lunches. Our kids' brains aren't being nourished. So then fast forward, you know, 10, 20 years, no wonder we're just seeing everything that we're seeing.
Yeah.
It's scary.
Yeah, it is scary. And I really just want to, I feel very called to just take a moment here for any mom that's listening right now that's like, this conversation might be blowing her mind. You know, maybe she, like me, like, you know, I suspected things. And as I kept doing some research, like yourself, you know, when you were at Pfizer, like started realizing like, wait a minute, you know, everybody's different and it could feel overwhelming. And, you know, like for me, I have a heart for single moms. I'm a single mom of four. And, you know, managing all this information and, you know, keeping a roof over our heads and working. And then also like, what are my kids eating and what are they doing? And the school lunch, it could feel like you just have no power and that you're being overrun. And I just want to speak to that woman and say, listen, I think one of the best things you said, Haley, was, you know, just think of single ingredients. Like, just think my kids are going to eat chicken. I'm cooking, like, I'm going to get the potato. I'm going to make a salad. I'm going to make the chicken. And that's what they're eating. And if you just, you know, think of that, like single ingredient foods, then you're in a safe place. If you buy your vegetables at a local farmer's market, if you get your meats from a local, like where they, what do you call it? Like, is it like a farm for animal farm, right?
There's ranchers. So these, they're doing like regenerative farming where they're, you know, raising the cows the way that they should be raised. Yes.
Yeah. And I know that, Kristen, you have things that are delivered from your home. Like there's sites like that you can do some research and look in your area or something.
There's some organic farms in New Jersey that like will deliver and you can seek them out. And I agree. I mean, this is a little bit more effort than going to the grocery store, definitely. But I think it's worth it in the long run to know where your food's coming from and know how it's being grown or raised.
Yeah. Raquel, kudos to you, mama. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah.
You know, I just, if I could chime in too, it's like, it can be very overwhelming and then you could just feel kind of defeated by it. I can't imagine being a single mom and just raising four kids on my own. And so I do think like, you know, if I were a mom and I'm, you know, single or not, and I'm just, my head is spinning right now. I'm like, where do I start? Mm-hmm. I think the first thing that I would do is just protect the house. Like, don't worry about, you know, what your kids are going to eat outside of the house or at school.
Yes.
You know, if you could pack the lunch, great. But if you, I mean, even like one really nourishing meal is better than nothing every single day. And so I would just stop like cold turkey buying any of the ultra processed stuff and bringing in the house. Like chips gone, cookies done, all of it's gone. Yes. You guys want snacks? You're snacking on fruit. And if you can get it organic, great. If you can't, just wash it in water and baking soda. Like really just kind of like, you know, give it a good scrub, let it sit in there for 15 minutes. And a lot of studies say that's enough to kill a lot of the pesticides. So you're washing your produce. If you guys are hungry, you're snacking on like seeds, nuts, fruit, veggies, yogurt, and that's that. And, you know, if you're not, then wait till dinner kind of a thing. And then dinners, I find like, you know, sometimes we think about like, okay, we have to, we're going to cook at home and we just get overwhelmed because it's like this crazy big meal that we're making. Well, it doesn't have to be that complicated. Like you said, like pop a chicken, like we love roast. Roast is so easy. I pop like a chuck roast in. You can get it for like, you know, $8 for a pound. We get like 2 pounds or a pound and a half. It usually lasts us two meals. Put your chuck roast in the slow cooker at the beginning of the day, throw in some potatoes and some carrots. Yes. You've got this nourishing meal. Bone broth is incredible. You know, get your white rice, maybe make it with that. That's a simple meal. We're eating hamburgers like all the time. So it's like, you know, hamburger, cheese, pickles, and that's that. You know, even pasta, like you can make that more nutrient dense by getting a good quality olive oil, putting some like Parmesan cheese on it that you're grating yourself. You know, don't buy the grated stuff because that has anti-caking agents in it. Just buy the chunk, grate it yourself. And then maybe it's like some cucumbers on the side or something like that. Like it can be really simple. And if your kids are hungry enough, they're going to eat it. And if they don't eat the first night because it's like, oh, it's gross, they're going to be hungry to eat a nourishing breakfast the next morning. Like skipping a meal isn't going to kill them, you know? So it can be so simple. Like I remember at one point I had five meals and I was rotating through. Monday was always this, Tuesday was this, Wednesday was this, Thursday was this. I got so good at making them. And it was like, this is what we're having. And the kids knew what to expect. It was a simple meal. I knew like what I needed to do that morning to prep. And it was like, okay, that's that. And you have a nourishing dinner. And that's incredible. Like strong work, mamas, strong work.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. One of my hacks was always making like, if I was cooking a meal, I tried to like double down on everything because then I would have leftovers and it would save me steps. And then we would have like a leftover day and all the leftovers and like do like a buffet style. And, you know, and it was like, just like, I would accumulate all the leftovers and then one day it would be like all the leftovers. And it was great because I knew like that day was going to come. And also just even like you said, like the slow cooker, I would put all the chicken breasts in there and like, and somebody vegetables. And then I would come home and all I had to do was the sides by the time I got home from work and I get the kids and, you know, from school and all that. Or I would just do a huge skillet, like cook all like the meat. And then when it's almost done, I'll throw like frozen organic like vegetables on top and boom. And then I would have like a salad or something.
Yeah. I like your idea too of just keeping it simple. Yeah. Like Monday is going to be this, Tuesday is going to be that. Like then it's on automatic pilot. There's no, because some of the stress is like, what am I going to make? I got to go to the store. That can get like complicated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It could get overwhelming. And then it's just like, I was going to get drive through or, you know, whatever, takeout or whatever versus just keep it simple. And yeah, it could be that easy. That's an amazing start. I think the key is just like, don't bring it into the house.
So speaking of an amazing start, can you tell us your theory of holding off on refined breads, pastas, and cereals during the first 3 years of a child's life? Why is this important? All my kids are screwed, by the way, at this point.
I know. Well, it's like, as soon as you give a kid bread, what do they want? They want bread, right? Like, that's my two youngest daughters. They're just like, we love bread. I mean, if they could eat bread, like, for every single meal. Because it's so
my daughter too.
So, I know. Yeah. Who can't? But that's the point is like, so we limit it. We get like a loaf of bread a week. And when it's gone, it's gone. It's like you enjoy it for like last a day. But it's like, I'm lucky if I have like enough the next day. I know. It's a big sandwiches or something. But it's like we're not giving it every day because, unfortunately, unlike what the food pyramid wants us to believe, you know, right. The grains at the bottom, eat your 7 to 10 grains a day. Oh my gosh. Like grains, there's so much more nutrient dense foods than grains that are refined, that are sprayed with glyphosate, that are just, you know, stripped of so much nutrient. So I just find that, or I found like the firstborn is always the luckiest, right? They're always in the best shape because, or like the best, like they always have like the best odds for them because at least for us, like I wasn't eating, and my husband at the time, you know, since divorced my first husband, but we weren't doing lots of grains and pastas. It was very like paleo-esque for us. It was like meats and veggies and fruits and whatever. And so my first just didn't have that. And so he would eat anything. I mean, this kid's like eating like freaking pieces of garlic. I mean, it's just like everything's lighting up his taste buds. It's like this fun like party in his mouth, like sardines. Yes, I'll take it. And then like as he got older, it's like I think I started making sourdough. I was craving bread with my second pregnancy. And so I'm like, okay, well, I'm just going to make my own sourdough. So I started making bread and, you know, he just would eat it, but it wasn't like it was like bread, you know, that sort of a thing.
Right.
And again, this is an N of one study, you know, of just my son. But then my daughter comes along and they're just naturally going to get all the good stuff because now the older kid's eating it now.
Right.
And she just, yeah, I mean, that's really what she wants. And unfortunately, like my ex and I split when she was young and the stuff she's being fed over there, she's like, I just want to, you know, but she just like that. She wants bread and pasta. Mom, I want bread and pasta. And then our third, the one that's, you know, I have with my husband today, she's got an amazing palate too. I mean, she does eat bread and like when it's there, she wants it, but this girl's eating like, you know, everything else as well.
Right.
And so
right.
I just feel like, and I see it with other people, I guess the bigger picture is like, once you give your kid bread, that's all they're going to want. So try to hold off on it as much as possible because you really are, they're going to eat the other stuff. They're going to eat all the other stuff. And so you give them that. The same goes for, you know, any ultra processed food. I put bread in the same category as an ultra processed food because it is. I mean, you know, you look at bread today and there's like 15 different ingredients in a loaf of bread and it lasts, you know, 2 weeks. What's up with that? That doesn't make sense.
No, something is wrong.
Yes. Why do you think that once you have bread, like that's all you want? Like, what do you count that to? Like, what is that? There is a thing about that. Like, even like when you go to restaurants, like they give you bread when you're sitting there, you're eating bread and butter before, you know, you get your meal. And I just went to this restaurant and these people are actually, you know, I was there with some friends and they're like, hey, where's our like, are we going to get like bread? Because we ordered and we're still waiting. Like, is there bread coming? And she was like, oh no, that's a $3 charge if you want bread.
Wow. Good for them. Because that usually is like a strategy I read. It's like, fill them up on the free bread. And then like, you know, what is the strategy? Something like you eat all the bread. I don't even know. Never mind.
Right. But you know, so I was like, oh, wow. Now they're charging. Like, what is happening? Like because that was always a normal thing. You would get bread and butter. And And I was like, wow, they're charging. I'm like, no, I said, personally, I'm good. I mean, I do want the bread. I'm like, you know, screw you. I'm not paying $3 extra for bread. But you're right that I have to say that I saw on the other table get the bread. They ordered the bread and it was like this beautiful, like artisan, like loaf, like rounded, like loaf. It looked like sourdough bread or like some like crusty, like Italian looking bread. And there is, I don't know if there's like an addiction, something like there is something that I was like, my mouth was, I was like, wow, maybe we should get the bread.
Yeah.
But we didn't, but it was, I did feel like my mouth was watering. Like I wanted that bread. I'm like, wow, this is like, there's some powerful thing going on. So I was just curious when you were like, once you get bread, you're like, I want bread. And I'm like, wow, that just triggered that memory that I just had this past weekend.
Yeah. I mean, bread is powerful. It's just, it's just like, it just looks at you and like teases you like, here I am, come and eat me. And you just can't say no. But I even think about like the sourdough that I make. It's just flour, salt, and water. And then like, I always like, I'm like, all right, if you want bread, girlfriend, you're loading it up with like, I'm like the butter, like a half a stick of butter on the bread, like the olive oil, or like, you got to have a healthy fat with your bread. You can't just eat the bread. So at least she does that. But like, I mean, I don't know, because you know, what's addicting about flour, wheat and water and salt. But anyways, it is like we all know. But it's like, I also think about, again, the bigger picture of like ultra processed foods in general. Like if you go down the grocery store and you go down the baby aisle, there's all these like puffs and it's like, you know, there's all these words like made with real fruit and made with veggies and help your kid develop their fine motor skills. And it's like all screaming out at parents are like,
I just thought that's what you're supposed to do. Like Cheerios, give your kid Cheerios. That's what the first food. And then they came out with Puffs because they were like less chokeable or whatever. I don't know. But that's just what you assume you have to do.
Yeah,
so it's interesting when you think, no, I don't have to do that.
You don't. No, I mean, my husband's going to kill me for saying this, but it's like kind of like the gateway drug to like ultra processed foods. He's like, you can't use that word with the Puffs. You know, like, yeah, but I'm going to because it's like they know what, as soon as they can get your kid, then like your kid's hooked for life. So I'd say like avoid the Puffs, avoid, you know, the bread and just watch all the amazing stuff your kid will eat until you give them the Puffs and the bread and stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's so true. What are your thoughts on artificial dyes? That's something that comes up a lot. And I think you posted something that they were actually banned in cosmetics, the red dye, but it's still allowed in food, which is sort of just mind blowing. But if you could share a little bit about that.
Yeah, dyes suck. Artificial dyes suck. They were since the 70s. There was a physician, Dr. Fengold, and he even has a book out. But like much to, you know, no one's surprise, it's like not that like widely known about because I think, you know, all the people are like, squash it. We don't want this coming out about dyes. But he was warning about, you know, just all the ingredients in ultra processed foods as well as artificial dyes in the 70s, just saying like it's causing, you know, he linked it to a lot of the attention disorders in kids today. And he called it, you know, and come to find out, you know, there's so much literature on artificial dyes, so much to where, you know, California is even starting to ban, you know, some of them. There are banned in other countries, but they're linked to, you know, behavior disorders, attention disorders, even like chromosomal damage, you know, and cancers in rice and in rats. So these dyes are awful. I see it firsthand in my kids and I do speak out a lot about it. And a lot of people will write in and share their own stories too. So what I see is my son will get night terrors if he has the dyes. And he'll also get this weird aggressiveness that's like, so not him, where he like can't control it. And I'm like, did you like, it's usually like if I'm picking him up from school or if I'm picking him up from his dad's, I'm like, what'd you eat? And like, I can almost always link it back to like something that had dye. And they're sometimes like hidden in food. Like they're in like things like pickles or yogurt. I mean, things we don't even like really think have dyes. Mm-hmm. Of course, they're in all the obvious, anything bright, you know, those cookies that are like just staring at you when you walk into the grocery stores, like the sugar ones or the white frosty and the sprinkles, it's all dyes in there and stuff too. And then my daughter, like it just makes her like more emotional. Like we fully embrace the emotions over here, but it's just like this extra amount that you really like. I feel like as a mom, you just notice that. Like it's like that's not your usual emotion. Like you just can't keep it together type of thing. But then parents like will write in and they're just like, night and day difference when they eliminate dyes from their kids, like night and day difference on how their kid acts. So there's something going on with the dyes. Yeah. I would say that's a great place to start if you're a mom. If you want your eyes to be opened about all these ingredients in our food, flip over anything that you buy and just, you know, you're going to go down and you're going to look up and there's six that are approved here in the US. And, you know, you can just Google like, what are the artificial food dyes? There's the red, the blue, the green, and the yellow. But you just, if you see that, put it back. Now, sometimes they're like, they have these other names like Blue Lakes. So they're a little bit more sneaky, but you can even look up the food dye and then the real name and like make sure you're avoiding that. And just see the difference that, you know, you notice in your kid. It's a wonderful place to start. But the food dyes, that's a hard, hard no for us over here.
Next up is a high fructose corn syrup that appears in a lot of processed foods. And it's mostly and like in sodas and ketchup. Why is this something to avoid? Like to me, that's like a no brainer. But, you know, some people may not be aware of that. Like what the high fructose corn syrup, when you see that ingredients, what is that?
Yeah. So it's a sugar. It's a really cheap, refined sugar linked to diabetes. And it's just, yeah, something you definitely want to avoid. Where what I've learned is that we do, I mean, we cook at home a lot. And so my kids are eating sugar. We don't even really count sugar over here. You know, I just, my approach to sugar is kind of like, if we bake it at home, we're using, if I can use like a maple syrup or a honey, I'll use that, or coconut sugar sometimes. If we're making chocolate chip cookies, I may do like half cane, half coconut or brown sugar or something like that. But if you're at the store and we just, yeah, sugar's in so much stuff, I'm like, even in, you know, bars and whatnot, it's like if it's the first couple ingredients are sugar, you know, put it back on the shelf. That's a dessert, or at least consider it a dessert. So there's a real, there's a spectrum of sugar. And I think some are fine. But then that high fructose corn syrup is like kind of towards the bottom of just this ultra processed refined sugar that you really want to try to stay away from. And it's in so many things, unfortunately.
Yes,
like it's in a lot of like peanut butters. It's in lots of ultra processed food. So I feel like the...
Is that because it's cheap? Is it just cheaper than using like a white sugar? Okay.
So it's so cheap. And I think the theme here is just the more you can avoid ultra processed foods. You know, it's funny because I think we went down all these different rabbit holes. And I do think it's the workings of like big food. I hate to say this, but I do think the, you know, the dietitians are kind of like in on it as well, because not that they're like, that's their agenda. I just don't think they know any better. I mean, lots of sponsorship comes from big food companies to the dietetic associations. And, you know, they're the ones that are kind of like everything in moderation. Well, you know, it just doesn't work for most people. And I just think the more you can avoid ultra processed foods. Oh, here, I was going down a different. So I think all these things came out where it was like, avoid fat. Fat is like awful. Run away from fat. That's the problem. And then next it was like, sugar is the problem. You know, you need to stay away from sugar. And they're telling us to stay away from sugar. And meanwhile, you know, they're creating these low sugar foods that have artificial sugars in it. So it's like zero sugar. And so they're, you know, they just, it's like all these different rabbit holes. But think beyond that and just be like, I need to avoid ultra processed foods in general. If you do that, I mean, that's just life changing.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about the seed oils, the artificial dyes, the high fructose corn syrup.
Exactly. If you're going more toward natural foods that are just from the planet Earth, which actually brings us to this next question, which I think is a great one, because this one is really confusing when we're talking about, like, you know, thinking like Little House in the Prairie days, right? But what about natural flavors? Right? What are they? This one is, you know, it is very confusing, and it's often in organic products as well when you read the label natural flavors.
Yeah. So there's a great book. This is what opened my husband's eyes, because he's like, come on, natural flavors. It's not that bad, Haley. And I'm like, I don't eat that. And they're like, no, they're bad. And he's just like, but then he read the book, The Dorito Effect by Mark Schapster. And that is such a good read. And my husband my husband devours books, like reads like three a week. And that is a top five book for him. So if you're looking for a good read, The Dorito Effect. And Mark, we had him on a live, and he had this really great analogy. If you just had a glass of water and you poured a ton of sugar into it and you gave it to your kid, like your kid probably is not going to drink that. They're not going to be like, oh, this is great. But if you add a natural flavor into it, you're going to guzzle it down. Like think about the electrolyte water or whatever. And so natural flavors are designed to be addictive. And so I don't think they're that much different than an artificial flavor. It's a chemical cocktail. I mean, there could be like 100 different things in a natural flavor, 100 different chemicals in a natural flavor. And
but how could they call it natural if it has, I don't understand, like, what's the difference between, why is it like artificial? It'll say like natural and artificial flavors.
Yeah. So it's artificial can include synthetic chemicals. A natural flavor can't. But I mean, they're still like, you know, things, they're still at the end of the day, both of them are designed to just like kind of hijack your taste buds and just taste way better. There's this really great old 60-minute episode where they like interview the food scientists, and they come right out and they say, they're like, our goal with a natural flavor is to get you addicted. It's to create a flavor. Like it's all this, like, it's like this lab, and they're just like putting these flavors together to create something. And they describe it as like something that hits your taste bud that tastes so good, but they don't want it to linger too much, because then they need you to then have the next one and the next one. I mean, it's like a science, and our kids can't compete with this. I mean, these flavors are designed to get you addicted. You give your kids natural flavors, they are not going to prefer the real flavor of a blueberry or a strawberry to the natural flavor.
Sure.
They're designed to taste better than real food.
Right. Because when I think of natural flavor, I'm thinking like squeeze
a little bit of
like a lemon, exactly. And it's natural flavor from like the lemon, you know, being squeezed. Oh, that's a natural flavor. They just like enhance it with a natural flavor.
They're so deceptive. It's just like vegetable oil, right? Vegetable oil is either soy or canola oil, but they call it, why do they call it vegetable
Sounds healthy.
Oil?
Yeah.
And we think like, this is good.
It's a vegetable.
It's not fair.
And it's so true, like what you said earlier, the everything in moderation message is just so misleading, because if you're eating this stuff that's addictive, really hard to have the control to not eat large amounts of it or want more or be able to limit it. You're talking really, really hard stuff for people to do.
There's a select amount that can do it. It's like maybe they just have super strong willpower, but like, I mean, you can't just eat one or two chips, like moderation.
No.
And I think, you know, and so again, it just speaks to like, cut out the ultra processed foods. I think there's a real differentiator too, because the moms listening might be like, whoa. So like, I can't even like go down the middle aisle of the grocery store anymore. That's not true. I think there's a difference between processed and ultra processed foods. And the definition that I use is that I'm always reading ingredients. Before I like buy anything, I'm going to read the ingredients. The definition of an ultra processed food is if it's in a package, obviously, and it contains one or more ingredients that you wouldn't find in your kitchen. Don't buy it. But there are things like, for example, pasta sauce, where it's tomatoes and like, you know, all the herbs you want and extra virgin olive oil. I have every single one of those things in my kitchen or outside. Like, that's okay. So the good thing is that there's companies that are making higher quality products, because we don't have time to make our own pasta sauce and can our own pickles and make our own peanut butter. But just know that when you're buying that, if you do, that's amazing. Some of that's on my list, like one day. But right now, I don't have that time. So that's my differentiator. I'm looking for something with every single ingredient that I would find in my own kitchen. And then, you know, I'm putting in my, and that's, then I'll buy that. Put it
that's
in
so great. That's such a
that's
great.
That's a great, yeah, rule great of thumb.
Tip. Yep. Yeah, that is such a great tip.
I wish it's not mine. It's not mine. I read it in a book, Ultra Processed People. There's a guy in England that wrote a great book on ultra processed food. It's another really good ultra processed people. And that was his definition. So I stole it. Okay, but I love it.
That's great, though. That's great. Because you know what? Listen, I think that's so great that you are reading books. And obviously, you've been throwing out a bunch of books that you've just in this little interview. But that's the thing. Like, I didn't read those books. So you're taking like little like helpful hints from these books and you're sharing your knowledge. Again, like it's just, you know, you're building a community and I can't tell you how lovely this is. And, you know, Kristen just tapped on that a little bit when you guys were just talking about everything in moderation, because we have something here. You know, what do you say to people that claim that you are promoting disordered eating when you educate people about foods with harmful ingredients? There are many dietitians out there promoting everything in moderation. And I can understand that concept about everything in moderation, you know, there's no perfect, like, you know, type of thing. But what is your view on that?
I mean, that just really bugs me. Like, that is just like, you say one thing about watching what your kids eat or not giving them certain foods or not giving them foods with artificial dyes. And it's just like automatic, you're going to cause an eating disorder in your kid. I'm like, come on, people. Like, we need to, I feel like that's a narrative that's been pushed down. I was just telling my husband this a while back. I'm like, if we could just find where the, like the source of that, I guarantee it came from like big foods to the dietitians.
Probably.
Class. Like they're, you know, like, anyone's getting on to us, you tell them this. Because nobody wants to mess with that. Nobody wants to
exactly.
give their kid eating. I grew up with so many friends with eating disorders and it broke my heart. I'm so grateful I played sports, because I could have, I mean, that would have been me too, of course. Like, we're just like, you know, that's right when all the models came out. It was like super skinny and like, you know, so that's devastating. And I feel like if we're being really honest with ourselves, it's practices like, you know, always commenting on food, like, oh, this food is going to make me fat, or I can't eat this food, or, you know, always seeing like maybe your mom stepping on a scale and like looking at her weight. I think those are things that enter into our kids' minds. And I also think like restricting a food and just be like, no, you can't eat that. That food's bad. You know, that might not be great for a kid. They might be like, okay. And then especially when they're younger. But what I'm saying is take it a step further and like two things. Don't restrict the food. If you don't like it, tell the kid why. Like, okay, we're not buying these cookies from the store because they contain, you know, Red 40, which you know, like makes you feel more irritable, and it's linked to like attention disorder. So you're not going to be able to focus. It also contains like a cheaper form of sugar that your body isn't going to be able to like use and process the way that maybe a higher quality sugar could. Yeah. So you're telling them the why, and then you're going home and you're making it yourself. So it's like, we're not restricting this. Let's just go home and make it with higher quality ingredients.
Right.
So they're not missing out on like the cookies or, you know, chips or crackers or, you know, whatever it is. We're just being mindful of what we're putting in our bodies.
Yes.
We're looking at ingredients. We know, and it's just a general, you can keep it really simple for kids. Like, you know, if you, whether you're God-centric or you're just like nature, whatever. God didn't design, you know, foods to be made in a lab to put in our body. Nature doesn't give us, you know, the foods that our body craves are the ones that come from nature.
Right.
Those are what our body can recognize. We know when we feel full. We know when we want to start eating again. That's fueling our brains and our bodies and our muscles. These foods made in labs, like they're made to like get us to overeat. We don't understand when we're full. And so you just kind of explain that to them. And then you just make it on your own. Like we eat ice cream for breakfast sometimes because it really, if you think about it, homemade ice cream is like a superfood. It has like egg yolks, cream, raw milk, some maple syrup, and some vanilla extract and sea salt. I'm like, I will give this kids to my kids all the time. So like, sure. We're not restricting food. We're just being mindful of like the quality of the food that we're putting in our bodies. And if we can't find something that doesn't have those ingredients we're making at home, I don't think that message is going to create eating disorders. I think kids are way smarter than what we give them credit for, and they understand it and it makes sense to them. Like, yeah, I don't want to put like mono and diglycerides in my body. Like that's, you know, whatever it is.
Absolutely. Yes. Let me tell you, I have such a quick story. My daughter, I was having a little, she had a couple of friends coming. She was having like this like little hangout. And I mean, she was like, I think she was like 9 or 10 years old. And I had all these little girls coming over and the parents were dropping them off. And one of the little girls brought a box of chocolate chip cookies. They were like Edamame's, like box of chocolate chip cookies. And so we're all like putting stuff on the table and they opened up the box. And I said, guys, I just want to, before we eat these cookies, and you can absolutely have them. I am not saying not to have them. However, let's just read the ingredients of how these cookies were made. And I had my daughter, I said, Alana, just read those ingredients. And she's like, could not pronounce a bunch of the words. And I said, I just wanted everyone just to be aware. And I had other things out on the table. And sure. Do you know that not one girl ate any of those cookies?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And like what you said, like these kids, like they're smart, like give them a choice. Like they're, it's just common sense. You know, they don't even want that. They want, we want what's good for us. Like that's our instinct. That's our survival instinct. Yeah. Right. And I just think of like Kristen, of Dr. Said, who talked about not restricting, you know, like I'm not telling you not to eat that. I'm just telling you, you want that? That's great. Let's make it.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Like make it yourself.
She's amazing. Here's Madea, right? Madea
Said. Yeah. Yeah. We got to meet her recently at the functional medicine conference and she was amazing. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I love her work. She's got some good kids books too, where she's really like educating kids on reading labels and all that. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah. Do you have cookbooks?
My husband and I have written 2 children's books. One is on My Superhero Foods. So just talking about, it's 2 kids and they go throughout their day and they just are eating all these superhero foods. And it talks about like all the powers they give them. I mean, that's kind of what, like where it started for me. Like I was so grateful that I had this information before I became a mom. And so when I met my husband, he's just like, how are your kids eating like, you know, salmon and broccoli? I mean, that's not normal. And I'm like, well, I just like link the power. So whatever they are into, you know, at the time my son was like 4 and was like, loved playing tag. I mean, just playing tag. So I'm like, you eat grass-fed beef and it's going to make you run so fast and nobody's going to be able to catch you. And it's like, yeah, I want that. Or it's like, eat avocados, it's going to make you jump higher. So you just link powers to the food. And it's so motivating to the kids. They're like, yeah, I want more avocados. So we wrote a book on that. We wrote a book on sleep. Like really, this one is my favorite. Just like talking about why sleep is important, motivating kids to want to go to sleep. Like that is where all of the good stuff happens. Like your body, your brain grows. And then just what do you do throughout the day to set you up for good sleep? Everything from like morning sunlight, to like the color of your nightlight. We have a third book coming on mindset, which I'm really excited about. And then we have three books for adults. One on sleep. My husband wrote a lot of that. Follows a lot of like the sleep science by Matthew Walker. It's just 18 things that like you can do today to get better sleep and why that is even important. It's an ebook. And then he doctor's take on prescription sleep aids and just more holistic stuff. So I really love that ebook and he contributed a ton to that. We have one on seed oils, how to eliminate them in your kitchen, what you should use instead, what the smoke points are, what trusted brands are.
Fantastic. Well, we're going to.
Yay. Okay. And this is all on your website, right?
It's all on our website. Yeah. And then we have a cookbook. It's like, I call it your breakfast like playbook. So it's a month's worth of recipes. And these are all nourishing, nutrient dense, easy, and really good. And so it starts out with like, what are your staples you need for the month? All the trusted brands. Then what are your perishables you need for each week? Then on Sunday, it's like half an hour of prep work. And then Monday through Friday, you have a recipe that's like 5 minutes. There's maybe few that take 10. It's like the homemade pancake recipes that take a little bit longer, but it's like a nourishing, hot, quick breakfast that's not cereal for your kids. Yeah. And it's a month's worth. And then there's some bonus recipes at the end that like we do on the weekend.
I'm checking that out. I love that. Okay.
Wow. That's incredible, Hilly. That is so fantastic.
Thank you. Thanks. Yeah. It's just like, what can we do to just, kids are way smarter than we give them credit for. And let's start with the kids. Like, why are we waiting until we're 40, 30 years old to learn about how important sleep is, learn about how important diet is? We're counting calories at this point. We're feeling guilty for like what we eat at lunch, whatever. Why aren't we teaching kids this information when they're young so that they have it? And then what are some tools for parents that, that are just like, okay, I'm ready. Where do I start? Type of thing.
Awesome. Well, you know what? Being mindful of our time, I know we're an hour and four, but I wanted to ask you, with all the things that we just covered, and it's so great that you broke that all down like that, what are two simple things? Well, one of the simple things, probably ordering some of these books, because I think that'll be a real help. That's so helpful. But what are two simple things that we can do today to improve our kids' nutrition?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel like I'm a broken record and I keep on repeating this.
Repetition is the mother of skill.
It is.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Thank you. Like eliminate ultra processed foods. Don't bring them into your house. Start by not bringing them into your house. And we went over the differentiator.
Yes.
If it has any ingredients you wouldn't find in your kitchen, put it back on the shelf. Stock your kitchen, your fridge, fruits, veggies, yogurt and honey with berries on top, any of that stuff. But don't stop with the ultra processed foods. Stop bringing it into your house. That is game changer. That's life changing, mm-hmm. life changing. And then I think the next is doing ultra processed foods. I mean, man, you eliminate so much. You eliminate, like we talked about, seed oils and artificial food dyes. So that's first and foremost. And then I think the second is like, we're talking about like kids' health. Get your kids outside more. I mean, I just find that like there's so much power in nature. So, especially in the summer, like go outside and play, get them outside, yes. Get like some natural sunlight, especially in the morning, like in their eyes, on their skin, get them out, like let them climb the trees and let them go and like explore. I think nature is powerful. And I was so grateful to have kind of a mentor like teach me that early on. I call her my second mom. And she's just like, rain, snow, shine, your kids outside for a
so true.
Amount of time.
Yeah.
And I just feel like, I don't know, it just brings this calm to them and this just like creativity and just the connect. And it's just, I don't know, but I just feel like it is. Sometimes people are like, wow, your kids are a little different. And I'm like, I really think it's like them just being outside. It just calms them. It's good for them. So yeah, get your kids outside more.
Yeah. So I just want to make a connection that I think is so great. I don't want it to go on the wayside. I asked you about two simple things that we can do today to improve our kids' nutrition. And you talked about the processed food, which is like, duh, right? That's amazing. Like if you just did that, would do so much wonder in so many different areas. And then you said, get your kids outside. And I just want to make the connection about nutrition and being in the outdoors, the nutrition, because that is nutrition, like for your brain health, just being in the sun, being by the trees or, maybe you live in the city. I don't know, but just being outside in fresh air, and that is part of a nutritional, you know, having nutritional value in your life.
Yeah, I love that.
Couldn't agree more.
Well, I just want to tell everyone you can connect with Haley on Instagram at MySuperHeroFoods and her website at MySuperHeroFoods.com. And that's where they can find all your books and all this information, right, Haley? Just, okay, yeah. Perfect. Yes. Well, thank you. This has been such a great conversation. I think we could have went on even for like another hour because it's such an important topic for all of us, I think, as moms and as parents and as people in this country. So thank you. We really appreciate your time today.
Thank you, guys. It was so nice to connect and to talk with both of you guys. Thank you.
The information provided in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended for the purpose of diagnosing, curing, treating, or preventing any disease. We are functional medicine certified health coaches and not licensed medical professionals. The opinions and advice of guests are their own and also not considered to be medical advice. Always consult with a healthcare professional when making any healthy lifestyle changes. We would love to hear from you. Please leave a comment or review. Email us at info@functionalmoms.com. If you enjoyed this episode, please hit the subscribe button.